I replaced all my Lululemon shorts with Bird Dogs. Bird Dog shorts do the exact same thing, but fit way better. They actually look like khaki shorts, so I can wear them all day, for my morning hike or bike ride to the bar. I can't stop wearing them. Join over 1 million guys who discovered the best shorts on the market. Go to birddogs.com/MLB and enter promo code baseball for a free baseball hat with your order. That's birddogs.com/MLB. Promo code baseball for a free hat. You won't want to take your Bird Dogs off. We promise you.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
All righty, let's start it off with Patrick Surtain II. He gives his top three wide receivers in the NFL entering the season, courtesy of our friends at the Pat McAfee Show.
Top three receivers. Right now, I'm going to have to go with Devontae, Jettas, and Tyreek.
So Devontae's just like impossible to stick with, huh? His get off, his shake is just insane. Is that real?
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Yeah, I can't fault that list. If I was going 1, 2, and 3, I would go Devontae 1, Justin Jefferson 2, and then Tyreek Hill 3. How do we round out 4 and 5, though, Hickey? Who would be your 4th and 5th best wide receivers in the NFL right now?
Jamar Chase is in the mix. I don't know if I got to think of the other off the top of my head, 4 or 5, but I would think in the mix, at least in the conversation, Jamar Chase.
Let me throw out some names to you. Stephon Diggs?
In the mix.
Cooper Kupp?
After last year, I will say still top 10. I will hold off on top 5 right now.
A.J. Brown?
No. I know, I'm trying to think. CeeDee Lamb?
CeeDee Lamb? Keenan Allen?
No.
Garrett Wilson?
Not yet. Good
for Jalen Waddle?
No. Probably is who we just said, right? Chase and Diggs?
Yeah. I can't crush you for that one. I think those are probably the first 5 that go right to the top of the cabeza and the tip of the tongue.
DK Metcalf is good, but not top 5.
No, I wouldn't call him top 5.
Debo,
I would say
a rough year.
Oh, deep. Yeah, that's the thing. Debo was great 2 years ago, and last year did not have a good season. If I had to give you my 5 right now, I would go number 1, Devontae Adams. Number 2, Justin Jefferson. Number 3, Tyreek Hill. Ah, man, 4 and 5 here is tough. I would go Jamar Chase 4, Stephon Diggs 5, just because I'm concerned about what the heck is going on with Stephon Diggs right now, Hickey.
I mean, outside of, I would just flip 2 and 3. I would put Tyreek Hill 2, Justin Jefferson 3. Otherwise, if we're all in agreement, I think the top 5, in terms of, again, order can change person to person, I would say we got the top 5 right in terms of the 5 names inside the list.
All right, let's go to a former teammate of Tyreek Hill. That, of course, is Travis Kelce. There were big questions last year. Can the Kansas City Chiefs win the Super Bowl? And can they get back to the big game without Tyreek Hill? Well, what happens when Travis Kelce retires? This is Travis Kelce on when he might retire.
Till the wheels fall off, baby. I love this game, man. I know I'm going to miss it when I'm done playing. But I hear you on that, and that's a business decision I'm sure I'll have to make at some point in my life. But for right now, I'm in this building wanting to win football games.
And that is music to the ears of Kansas City Chiefs fans in the Chiefs Kingdom, Hickey, because don't get me wrong, we all know how great Patrick Mahomes is, but we won't have that question, can Patrick Mahomes win a Super Bowl again, until Travis Kelce walks away, just because you wonder who's the next weapon that they're going to bring in. But you look at that wide receiving core, it's nothing fantastic this year. They lose Tyreek Hill. I know Travis Kelce still is their preeminent weapon, but they were able to get right back to the big game and end up winning the Super Bowl. When you get rid of Travis Kelce, it's like, okay, who do you create as the next guy? I know Brady, it was 20 years, and Brady, even though he had these great comebacks, he wasn't an MVP in that first wave of the dynasty, and you got to see Brady win Super Bowls with David Givens and David Patton being some of his better wide receivers, Troy Brown. Then they get a big stud, even though they did not win with Randy Moss. And then after that, it was Julian Edelman and Rob Gronkowski. You just wonder who are the different cast of characters that eventually they will add in. And you know Tyreek Hill is now out of the fold, did not affect them. The connection between Mahomes and Travis Kelce is just unbeatable. It is ridiculous how good the two of those guys are. You just wonder in this eventual next chapter, and it's great to hear that Kelsey's going to play until the wheels fall off because you know he loves the game. He's winning. He's dominating at a high level. You may as well get as many rings as you can. And then once you start to feel too much pain in the legs or the back or the arms or whatever, then you'll walk away. But right now, I don't think that is anywhere close to happening. You know, bare minimum, probably 3 more years for Travis Kelce. And that's great news for Chiefs fans. But it's going to be fascinating to see after Kelce, who are the people that they bring in to replace a connection that is just ridiculous right now.
And that's why I think if you're Brett Veach, you hear him, and yes, right, he's nowhere close to retirement, it sounds like, but you better start thinking now of how can I get, whether it's a receiver or a tight end, in here that can start to develop now, so then in 3 or 4 years, if when Travis Kelce does leave or retire, you can then have a replacement like you did with Tyreek Hill when he left. Oh, here's Travis Kelce, he's still already here, we still have a great weapon and a great connection. Because if Kelce leaves sooner rather than later and you have this wide receiver room and this really skill core, say maybe some faces change, but the skill level is overall the same, it's going to be tough. Tough for Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs to make some hay in the postseason.
Justin Herbert, who's entering year 4, says he hasn't considered holding in order to get a new contract.
It's something that I really haven't thought a whole lot about. I think the most of the offseason so far has been worried about, you know, getting my shoulder right, making sure that I'm the best quarterback that I can be for this team. It's something that you can address. I'm not quite sure. I don't have any more updates for you at this time. But, like I've said earlier, I think the world of the Chargers organization, I've got complete faith in the front office. So that's something that you'll address at the time. But I don't have any updates right now.
Herbert's from Oregon. He sounded like he was Canadian there, Hickey, going organization. That's very hockey-like.
Same thing. That's very funny.
For a second, and obviously you know the story of Justin Herbert, I'm like, where the heck is he from? Oh, yeah, he's from Oregon. He's from Eugene. Organization?
Organization.
I wonder if they say it like that out there in Oregon.
Maybe just the Canadian just bleeds down.
I feel like the holding in concept applies to everybody but quarterbacks. If you're a leader of a team, and usually the quarterback is associated to be a leader, I know you got to go get your own, especially with how last year ended in that embarrassing playoff performance. I feel as if even if Justin Herbert wanted to hold in, he couldn't, just because that would just be a ridiculous distraction there.
Oh, I mean, you're right. Any quarterback, because it's like it's different. Holding in is, especially for quarterbacks, almost better because you're seen every day. So the media sees you. There's videos of you. The fans see you. When you're holding out, you're not out of sight, out of mind, obviously, but you're not there. When you're there and not practicing, it almost kind of just, you're always the
diva.
Story no matter what.
It feels, if you're, it's weird. For any other position, I get it, it's fine. But when the quarterback salary, we all know Herbert's eventually going to get the deal, where it's not that case for all these other positions, I could use the diva tag then for quarterback. I know that may not make sense, but if you're a running back, you may not get paid. If you're a tight end, you may not get paid. If you're a defensive back, you may not get paid. But when you're a quarterback, you are the franchise. So everyone knows you're eventually going to get paid. I think it's a bad look if you end up holding in, Hickey.
I guess what I'll say is, look, you got to do what you got to do, right? To get the money you want and to make a statement and to try to show some leverage, any position, I have no problem with even quarterback to kind of flex your leverage muscles any way you can. Put pressure on the team.
And then you know this. If he does that and the Chargers are struggling early in the year, Hickey's going to say, well, he could have used those extra reps when he was holding in. Could have used those reps on the field.
OTAs? Boy, he could have used that chemistry, huh?
Jonathan Taylor says it's frustrating to see the NFL undervalue the running back position.
It's sad. It sucks because a lot of positions do a lot for their team. But specifically speaking for the running back position, I can just speak firsthand. We do a lot. And you just want to be treated fairly. And not even treated fairly. You just want to be, you know, appreciated for what you bring to the team.
He's right, and he'll get paid, Hickey, because the Colts have no other option here. And for most running backs, I don't feel confident that they're going to get paid. But Taylor is that face of that team right now. They hope it's one day Anthony Richardson. But I can't sit here with any great amount of confidence to tell you that Anthony Richardson's going to be the stud quarterback in the NFL.
And especially on offense, skill position-wise, they're paying nobody. Receiver, tight end, running back, quarterback. There's no ballooning salary that's going to hurt the salary cap.
Outside of Quinnen Nelson and Shaq Leonard, who are the Colts actually paying?
DeForest Buckner's got a big-time deal.
Yeah.
Ryan Kelly for centers and Braden Smith for right tackles. Now, they've been passed up because it's now like 2 and 3 years, I think, respectively, since the deal.
So they got a lot of money invested into the offensive line.
Yes.
And that line stunk last year.
Five guys getting paid above, let's say, league average.
Justin Field says he and DJ Moore have already built good chemistry.
I mean, it did come quickly. I didn't really expect anything because it's different for each guy, but I feel like with DJ, it's, you know, his body language is pretty easy to read. And really early on, we communicated on, you know, how we want, you know, each route ran and stuff like that. And of course, you know, he's a lot of experience. He's been in the league for, you know, a good period of time now. So, you know, he's played a lot of football, so he knows, you know, different coverages really well. That's one thing that I was kind of impressed about, like, with the offense coming in and just, you know, understanding, seeing coverages really well on choice routes and stuff like that. So, you know, he's been great, and, you know, the chemistry has definitely picked up.
And we go from Justin Fields talking about his new wide receiver to Lamar Jackson talking about his new wide receiver, Odell Beckham Jr.
I think he looked pretty smooth. Crisp routes, great hands. As everybody know, you know, he can catch the ball. Looked pretty good out there.
I hope Odell's able to stay healthy this year. Because Odell is fun. I know it could be a pain sometimes, and there's a lot of drama with Odell Beckham Jr., but what he displayed towards the end, well, it's only a half year in L.A., but what he was showing in the Super Bowl in L.A., he caught that touchdown, then he has the injury. It just absolutely stinks. I don't think Odell is a great player anymore, Hickey, but I am rooting for him because I just want to see that connection between Lamar and Odell, two players that when you look back at the last 10 years of football, they're two of the more electrifying players and entertaining players. And if you could get Odell back to just being a good player with Lamar Jackson, in theory, that could be a fun connection. But once again, we got to see the health of Lamar and then also the health of Odell Beckham Jr.
Right. Unfortunately, the H word is a big one, both of them.
Let's go to Nikola Jokic. Remember, he didn't want to go to the parade in Denver? Well, now he said he's happy that he did not go home to go ride the horses.
You know that I told that I don't want to stay on parade, but I want to stay on parade. This is the best life. Yeah, this is amazing. We're all going to remember this our whole lives.
I love that guy. Mike Malone says the goal is to keep Bruce Brown and run it back.
Hey, y'all tell me, is Brucey B going anywhere? Hell no.
Wow. He was drunk. He was really drunk, Hickey.
You know what we learned about Mike Malone, his credit? He's not afraid to kind of chirp. When he's feeling it, he will let, you know, he's not into the coach speak.
Well, you know what's funny about that? Don't get me wrong. Bruce Brown had a really good playoffs. But you're at the championship parade, and that's like your big line. We'll get Bruce Brown back. We'll get him back, and we'll run it back. Like, it's just so funny. A good player, but he's not a great player in this league. You know who he kind of sounded like, Hickey? You have any guesses?
Who he sounded like? I don't know.
Play it again, and just, I think it will come to you. Play that clip again.
Hey, y'all tell me, is Brucey B going anywhere? Hell no.
He sounded like you walking out of the Rose Bowl.
Oh, come on.
You know, Penn State is here. You know, they're coming back next year, and we're going to go win the championship. No big deal. No big deal. We back.
Me and Michael Malone, you know, hey, when you're happy and celebrating.
Except, you know what the difference is going to be? That guy actually is a champion. Your we're back and no big deal stuff is going to sound like Sam Ellinger when he said that about Texas.
No, come on.
Why not? Come on. You just even said you like Michigan to win it all this year. Penn State's in the Big Ten.
I'm saying Penn State College World Playoff. Let's go.
They're not making the college football playoff.
Two teams from the Big Ten.
Will you beat either Ohio State or Michigan this year?
Yes.
The Ohio State game is on October 21st. That is in the horseshoe.
In the shoe.
And you have Michigan on November 11th. That's at Penn State, but that's a noon kickoff.
Yeah.
That should be a primetime game.
Disgusting.
Will you beat either?
Yes.
Will you beat Ohio State?
Yes.
Will you beat Michigan?
Right now on June 15th, I will say no.
Okay. You know what? I can't believe I'm going to say this. O-H-I-O! Kind of feel like Ohio State and Michigan both go win those games. You're going to be set up for a letdown this year. That's what's going to happen.
Well, my hopes legitimately have not been higher in a while, so I'm ready for heartbreak. But no heartbreak coming this year.
Yeah, you're like Sinatra singing High Hopes. But I will say, I keep on reading a lot about Penn State this year. They got like a bunch of like top 20 prospects in this upcoming NFL draft.
They have a loaded team. They have a loaded team everywhere. They have a great defense led by your guy, Manny Diaz.
Ugh.
Talent on offense.
What a clown that guy is.
Let's go.
Okay. Jeez. Now, everyone listening right now, you'll be rooting against Penn State this season because Hickey will be insufferable. You know, I want you guys to beat West Virginia, Delaware, Illinois, Iowa, Northwestern, UMass. Start the year off 6-0. And you know what? I actually hope you beat Ohio State. Then you'll have a letdown against Indiana, beat Maryland, and you'll get all ready for Michigan. Then Michigan will beat you by 50. That'd be fun. All righty, that's the News Brief. Zach Gilb Show, CBS Sports Radio. We'll come on back with Fozzie Whitaker.
Do you hear that? That is the sound of BMW performance without a single piston or cylinder. A generation of all-electric vehicles designed and built like no other. The BMW iX, i7, and i4 revolutionize every drive into a thrilling opportunity to feel the pure rush of BMW 100% electric. But isn't that what you'd expect from the ultimate electric driving machine? Take advantage of exceptional lease and finance offers today.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
All righty, we continue. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. I want to talk a little bit about the Texas Longhorns right now. So you welcome in one of their own and a man that's a part of the Texas Longhorn Radio Network, and that, of course, is Fozzie Whitaker. Fozzie, appreciate the time as always. How you been?
I've been well, Zach. I appreciate you having me on the show, man, and I'm excited to see what this football season holds for this Texas football team.
You know, I'm a little bit disappointed because I was expecting this epic QB battle with the way that we were hyping it up between Quinn Ewers and Arch Manning, and very quickly, and I thought it was savvy to put the distraction away to just go, okay, Quinn Ewers is our guy. But I was annoyed by it from a media standpoint.
I will say there were a lot of expectations headed into spring ball. Obviously, it might have been the most hype surrounding spring ball that Texas has had in quite some time. In regards to the quarterback position in a race that was to be had. I mean, whenever Quinn Ewers came, even as he transferred, the hype was there, but it wasn't nearly as much as what the battle would be between Arch Manning and Quinn Ewers. So Sark is savvy. You mentioned that he went on and put some of those rumors to rest. From my opinion, from what I witnessed throughout spring ball and seeing him even throughout this offseason working out and getting his mind and his body right, he looks like he's a completely different person. And I'm talking about Quinn Ewers. He appears to have taken that next step forward, and he looks poised and ready to be that next quarterback that Sark has in his lineage of quarterbacks that have been successful and ready to make the next step of hopefully being a primetime top-tier quarterback and possibly a Heisman candidate when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I look at the first three games of the season. I'm not going to get all excited about Rice and Wyoming, but then you do have Alabama sandwiched in between. And I just wonder last year if Quinn Ewers was able to stay healthy, if they would have won that game, because that game was right there for the taking, and unfortunately he got hurt. That's going to be the big fun one right out of the gate, and Quinn Ewers could make a big statement in that game going to Tuscaloosa to play Alabama.
Absolutely. I 100% agree with you on that. The we call it the what-if game 2.0 because it was the kind of reminiscent of the national championship whenever I played back in 2009 against Alabama yet again. Colt McCoy goes down in the first quarter, and we're getting ready to put some points on the board and mount up a good offensive drive, and it kind of ends and dashes our hopes. as we know it. And then here comes the birth of the legacy and the dynasty of Nick Saban for the next 12, 13 years, just making run after run in the college football playoffs and the BCS national championship appearances. So that hopefully we don't experience the what if game 3.0 this upcoming season. But Quinn Ewers looked like if he would have been on the same pace that he had at the first quarter, where he put up 134 yards against that really good Alabama defense, then he has an opportunity to make a name for himself. And that would be the game that would allow him to start getting on the watch of all of those national pundits in relation to getting all the media hype around him. I mean, he already has that this offseason with the offense that Texas is heralding with the receiver help and the tight end help and the kind of running back by committee approach. But Quinn Ewers definitely has the tools to be successful. And if they can go down in Tuscaloosa and play the way that they did throughout the course of the last game and finish it out in the fourth quarter, that would put Texas on the map in a large way against a very good Alabama team led by Nick Saban.
Fozzie Whitaker here with us. We know what the expectations once were for Quinn Ewers, and he won this job, so it says a lot, especially with the hype surrounding Arch Manning. I know this is still going to be a question throughout the season, and it's going to depend on how well Quinn Ewers does play, but how long of a leash do you think it is for Quinn Ewers?
I think he has some grace and a little bit of leeway with Coach Sark. What Coach Sark really loves to do is once he names that starter, he wants to ride with that guy. And if that starter has some struggling moments, he let them struggle just for a little bit before he allows for somebody else to switch it out. And we saw a little bit of that play out whenever Casey Thompson and Hudson Card were going back and forth battling it out in Steve Sarkisian's first year as the head coach. And so I think Quinn Ewers is the guy. He gave him the keys already last year. Once he got back healthy, he came back again, even after Hudson Card showed and played his best game in a Texas uniform. He went back to Quinn Ewers, who was the unsigned starter at the beginning of the season, and said, hey, this is still your job. Go out and prove it to everybody. So I think Quinn Ewers still has that leash, although Arch Manning is right there kind of nipping at his heels. But honestly, I think Malik Murphy is going to be that second string quarterback throughout the course of this season. I know he only flashed a little bit in the spring game, if you were able to see some of that. But this guy has all of the physical tools that you are looking for in a Steve Sarkisian type of quarterback. This guy can throw it, has a very big, strong arm, was able to throw a beautiful ball to Jonte Cook in the spring game. That was a 75-yard bomb for a touchdown. And he just was able to play lights out. I think he actually, in my opinion, had the best spring game out of all three of the quarterbacks between Quinn Ewers, Arch Manning, and himself from just a performance standpoint. But all three of those guys, I think it's going to make for a healthy competition throughout the quarterback room, and they're going to push each other. But I think it's Quinn Ewers' job throughout the course of the season, barring any injury.
Which is fascinating, just the point about Murphy, because if Quinn Ewers is in a position, hopefully it's not for your case, where he gets benched, it's just like, I think a lot of fans would expect that it would be Arch that would be the next man up, but that's not what you're saying.
Yeah, I don't think so. And the reason why I say that is because every time, like, we have hinted at it as, like, media members and as on the Longhorn Network, we've kind of, like, said, you know, is Arch basically number two? Steve Sarkisian goes out of his way to say, hey, don't forget about the guy from California that I handpicked and recruited myself. And he makes sure that Malik Murphy is always brought up in the conversation each time a quarterback battle is talked about. And Malik Murphy he was coming off an injury last season, so he didn't get to play and not a lot of people saw him in practice. And then he started off spring ball, actually still recovering from a separate injury. And so he had a late start in spring ball. So he's still kind of a bit of an unknown until you saw what he was able to do from a production standpoint in spring game. But it's Steve Sarkisian's MO to say, hey, it is not just two quarterbacks in that room that are competing for a spot to be able to showcase their abilities on the big stage. But Malik Murphy is always in there and has been a big force and a driving factor of what this quarterback room can be here in 2023.
So where is Arch Manning at right now? Like, it seems like he has a lot of work to do, or is that just, you know, reading too much into it?
I wouldn't say he has a lot of work to do. I think he's just a first-year guy still trying to figure out the process of what it means to come into this type of situation. It's not very often that you see a number one quarterback come into a situation where they're following behind another number one quarterback that's on the roster right now. So it's a little different as far as navigating those types of waters. But I think this is the perfect opportunity for him to learn in the biggest way from Quinn Ewers, who is in year two as a starting quarterback and under Steve Sarkisian's offense, to be able to develop and understand, okay, this is where the playbook can go. This is the identity that coach is looking for from his starting quarterback. This is where I could see myself evolving to and maybe even surpassing once I get the opportunity to take the torch whenever my time comes. So I think it's just more of a learning opportunity. We saw what Quinn Ewers was his first year as a redshirt freshman out there and a first-time starter. He didn't necessarily look his best throughout the course of the entire season. And I think Steve Sarkisian doesn't want to put a guy out there if they're not completely ready. And if you can allow them time to basically use this as a redshirt year, learn some of the offense, get an idea of what the offense looks like, build some chemistry with some of the guys that you will be playing with in the future, then it could make for a better transition whenever it's Arch Manning's time to be able to take the helm as the starting quarterback.
And I also wonder, Fozzie Whitaker, if this was kind of by design with the Manning family, because a lot of people, when they heard that Quinn Ewers was going to Texas, Arch Manning was going to Texas, it was like, hold on, Quinn Ewers is already there. So I wonder if the Manning family kind of looked at it, maybe it's not the worst thing in the world for the plan to be to sit for a year before you then go play the two other years before you're eligible for the draft.
Yeah, absolutely. That Manning household, I mean, they know
a little intelligent in that household.
Yeah, they know football quite well, and they probably understand the importance of what it means sometimes to even take a year to get acclimated and adjusted to a system. I mean, we got to remember this was a guy that was supposed to graduate last month. So he's still technically very fresh whenever you're talking about his appearance. He obviously graduated early and was able to enroll at Texas, but he's still just a senior, just graduating senior in high school from age perspective. So he still has some a maturation process that he has to undergo. Spring ball was very good for him to be able to start that process a little bit earlier. And then getting into summer workouts right now and getting those reps with some of those receivers, getting that throwing time on their own, having the opportunity to just be himself with his teammates is going to take him a long way. And I think, like I said, having a guy like Quinn Ewers, who's already done it for a season and has progressed and taken the next step to transforming his body to be more of a, in my opinion, more of a complete quarterback for what Steve Sarkisian is looking for. It's a mold and kind of a way or a blueprint to show Arch Manning, hey, whenever I'm done, if everything goes according to plan, I'm going to play this year and then I'll be out of here. And then it's between you and Malik Murphy and whoever wins that, you know, that's your job to lose. But my goal is to show you how it's done, get out of here and hand the keys off to somebody that's going to do it just as well as I did or take it up to another level.
Fozzie Whitaker, I feel like this has become a punchline every time we ask this question, is Texas back? But where is your confidence level heading into this season that will be saying Texas is back and they'll end up winning the Big 12 this year?
Man, that is a interesting statement, right? That's gotten some people in trouble quite a few times over the past decade with some false hopes and pretensions around what Texas is perceived to be. But I think what gives me hope about Texas, I wouldn't say that they're technically back until they prove it, just because, like we talked about over the past decade, they haven't shown it yet.
So yeah, you don't want to be like Sam Ellinger.
Yeah, until you show it to me, then I will know for a fact what Texas really is all about. But what I can say is that Steve Sarkisian, he's in his first 3 years as the head coach, has led unbelievable recruiting classes. This is some of the best recruiting that Texas has done. And it hasn't been the same way as previous top five and top 10 recruiting classes in the past decade, because Steve Sarkisian has built this team from the trenches. And we all know the SEC transition is looming a year from now whenever they get ready to go there in 24. And where the game is won and lost typically in the SEC, and whenever you get to the playoffs and whenever you get to national championship and bowl game, postseason type games, where you are most dominant at, if you're dominant in the trenches, that allows you to control the game, and it makes it that much easier for you to have success on the offensive or the defensive side of the ball. So what gives me more hope about this team is the way Steve Sarkisian has recruited. I mean, you had 14 O linemen in the past two seasons, and a lot of these guys are top-tier linemen that are huge, massive. Like, they come off the bus, and this is the best offensive line I've ever seen Texas have since the 2004 kind of football season where Texas goes on to win the national championship and the team prior that played Michigan in the Rose Bowl. Those two offensive linemen looked really good, and a lot of those guys played NFL for a very long time. Has not looked like that ever since. And now what I'm seeing is Steve Sarkisian finding a mold as to getting that offensive line back to some of that prowess, getting some dominance in there and creating identity for what Texas can be up front. And same way with the defensive line, they've recruited at a high level on the defensive side of the ball. Texas has been known for putting defensive ends in the NFL, but even some of the defensive tackles they've had some success with, I'm starting to see that come back to where Texas is. So I think this is the best start and the best looking Texas team to get them back on the right track to say, hey, Texas is back. But I will say it whenever they prove it to me by winning a Big 12 championship and hopefully playing in the CFP.
Last thing I'll ask you, Fozzie Whitaker, who is the team in the Big 12? If I was to tell you, okay, Texas is not going to win it this year, who's the team that you look at and you go, okay, it's going to be them then in the Big 12?
Boy, that is a good question, Zach. I mean, if you look at last season as a perfect example, I mean, TCU was, I think, predicted to finish seventh.
Yeah, no one had them. Big 12. It was crazy. Their own coach didn't even think that was going to happen last year.
Right. I don't know how you even prepare for that. And they didn't even win the Big 12. Kansas State was the one
that won
the Big 12. So it's like.
Because they didn't get the ball to Max Duggan. I could not believe that play calling by Sonny Dykes. Oh, we had him on a few weeks ago. I said to him, I love what you did last year, Sonny Dykes. But hand the ball off to Max Duggan, you guys would have won the Big 12. He goes, you're probably right.
Max Duggan was not going to be denied if he had that last opportunity. I can tell you that for sure. But it's very weird to kind of predict. Even the year before, Oklahoma State and Baylor, neither one of those teams were kind of the front runners or the preseason favorites to be able to win the Big 12 title. So it's hard to say because I really like Kansas. Now,
okay.
I don't know if they would actually be able to play for a Big 12 title, but they have a lot of pieces coming back and a lot of production. Their offense looks really good. You got Devin Neal. You got Jalen Daniels. You got Daniel Hyshaw coming back. You got Mason Fairchild. You got Arnold and other receivers. The defense is the issue for them. If they can shore up their defense, they have an opportunity to really create an identity for themselves in the Big 12 race to be able to make some noise that allows them to – move the needle just a little bit. And I may be putting a little too much faith in them because they haven't necessarily proven in the past two decades of kind of being a Big 12 power yet. But there's some faith in what I'm seeing Lance Leipold do out in Lawrence. And if I had to maybe say one more team, I think Joey McGuire's team out in Lubbock, Texas Tech. They've been receiving a lot of preseason hype. He's early on in his coaching tenure, but I love what he is doing. He brings a lot of energy to it. And this was a team similar to Kansas that had a lot of offense. It wasn't necessarily because they struggled that much on offense, but the identity that they had on defense, they couldn't necessarily stop anybody. If they can find ways to take the ball away, limit some of the yardage that they gave up in 2022, then they can make some big headwinds. They won eight games a season ago. They can make some big headwinds and finding their foothold in the Big 12 and possibly using that momentum to take over as a power for years to come whenever Oklahoma and Texas leave for the SEC.
That was the other team I was going to say, Oklahoma. I can't wait to see what they do this year, Fozzie Whitaker, because last year was not good. And Brent Venables, we were all saying for years, can't wait to see what he's going to do when he finally leaves Clemson. And last year did not go their way.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of a footprint of what Texas did. I mean, Steve Sarkisian, it's so eerily similar, those two coaches having similar first years. Steve Sarkisian's first year, Texas goes 5-7. Brent Venables' first year, Oklahoma goes 6-7. But they both had horrendous defenses, like all-time worst defenses in the history of their schools. I mean, Texas was giving up 400 yards per game, 200 on the ground, 200 in the air. And that looked almost identical to what Oklahoma did the following year, which was this past season. And that is not typical of what Brent Venables is known for, not typical of what he brings to the table, and definitely not typical of what Oklahoma has been in the Big 12 in their first losing season. And I don't know how long. They hadn't had a losing season in forever. And so having that on their stain, obviously they got a lot to prove about themselves. Had a phenomenal recruiting class this past season, as they've always been a top 10 recruiting team as well. And I think they have a similar bounce back to what Texas did in year number two, where Texas went 5-7 year one. Steve Sarkisian finds a way to get them going. And then in a regular season, they finish 8-4 with, if they had a little bit of help, could have had a chance to have an appearance in a Big 12 championship game. And then they end up losing to Washington in the Alamo Bowl. So finish 8-5. But I could see a jump like that happening for Oklahoma in year number two, especially with Dillon Gabriel being at the quarterback, veteran guy, savvy, a person that I picked as the preseason player of the year a season ago. I think he's going to have a great season and find a way to get that Oklahoma team headed in the right direction with some more wins on the board for them under Brent Venables in year number two.
Fozzie Whitaker, good deal. Appreciate the time. We'll be talking to you throughout the college football season. Thank you.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it, Zach. Man, you have a good one.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
I will say I'm incredibly biased against the commissioner of Major League Baseball, Rob Manfred. I do not like him. I think he is an incompetent commissioner outside of the pitch clock. The pitch clock I'll give him credit for. I have not heard these comments yet. I've only read about them. So let's see if they sound as bad as they do read. Here is Rob Manfred saying a new stadium was never going to be built in Oakland, and that's why the A's are leaving.
And I hear from them. You know, I feel sorry for the fans in Oakland. I do not like this outcome. I understand why they feel the way they do. I think that the real question is, what is it that Oakland was prepared to do? There is no Oakland offer, okay? I mean, they never got to the point where they had a plan to build a stadium at any site. And it's not just John Fisher. You don't build a stadium based on the club activity alone. The community has to provide support. And, you know, at some point you come to the realization it's just not going to happen.
Can he just be honest? Can he just say they want to move to Las Vegas? Because being in a Las Vegas market for the sport is more attractive than being in Oakland. We've seen the Raiders leave and go to Las Vegas. All right? It happens. And we've seen, right, hockey have a team in Vegas. We've seen the NFL now have a team in Vegas. That's just the way the sport is trending, and you want to be involved in a Vegas market. That's what this is, Hickey. They don't want to be in Oakland. They want to be in Las Vegas. So if you're going to do that, just be honest.
They tanked it, right? They did this on purpose. So yeah, they are getting everything they wanted. This is exactly what they wanted to do. They wanted to go to Vegas, but they didn't want to just uproot the team. They wanted an excuse. And so they just gutted the roster, blamed it on no one showing up, blamed it on no stadium. And now here we are.
And those fans won't support the team. So if you're already going to lose those fans, like, what are you going to do? Win over like 10% of the fans still out of the 100% that are from Oakland, you know, from the Oakland area, to maybe go follow you and still watch you when you go to Las Vegas? It's just tell the truth here. And I think people would respect them more. Not that they would like the decision more, but you would respect them more if you would just be honest. And here is Rob Manfred giving his reaction to the A's fans that did this reverse boycott the other night when they got about almost 30,000 fans in the stadium when night in and night out, it's usually only 8,000 that show up, to still show you it's not the lack of fan support why this team would be moving and they could still fill the building. They just hate the owner's guts.
You know, I mean, it was great. It's great to see what is this year, you know, almost an average Major League Baseball crowd in the facility for one night. That's a great thing.
Oh, he's so sarcastic there. He's such a douche. Hickey, he's the worst. He's a terrible public speaker, and I know he has to carry the water for all the owners because that's what he's paid to do. And the first answer, okay, he's never going to tell you the truth. But to poke the bear there when it's not necessary and to poke the victims here, that's just ridiculous. Oh, yeah, they got an average crowd. Oh, give me a break. Give me a break.
He just took a dump on him.
That's terrible.
That's a low blow.
That's why I can't stand that guy's guts. Because he did it during the pandemic, too. Did the same thing. Spat in all of our faces when we were just trying to watch something on television. Guy's a clown, Rob Manfred. Weak. Phony. Gutless. Just a joke. All right, that will do it for the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio on this Thursday. Big thanks to Amirov, Fozzie Whitaker, Hot Ticket Geach, and everybody. We out. Bye-bye.
Peace.